Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adeta Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
That lock is to make this thing work?
No, the motor is running.
Oh, that's okay. What is this?
Okay. Schlägt du da? No. Very much ever done.
Okay, so then continuing with the Saintly Sannyasi from Jayagadama. Understanding the saintly sannyasi did not say anything more about changing his garments. Folding his hands, he said, "O Master, I am your disciple, and I have taken shelter at your feet. Whatever instruction you give, I will place in my head without argument. By hearing your words, I have understood that pure love for Lord Krishna is the only Vaishnava religion. That love is the eternal religion of the soul. That religion is perfect, pure and natural. How should I regard the other religions in the various countries of the world?" The saintly Babaji replied, "O great soul, religion is one, it is not two, and it is not many. There is only one religion for the soul. That religion is called the Vaishnava religion. There is no reason why religion should be different for different languages, countries, and peoples. The religion of the soul may be called by different names, but it is not possible that there can be different religions. The religion of the soul is the pure love the atomic spiritual entity bears for the supreme spiritual entity. Because of differing material conceptions, some spirit souls have distorted that original religion and give it a variety of different shapes. The pure and original form of the soul's religion is the Vaishnava religion. Other so-called religions are merely distorted forms of the Vaishnava religion. Other religions are pure to the degree that they are like the Vaishnava religion." Some days ago in Sri Rajadham, I placed the same question before the feet of Srila Sanatan Goswami, who is a personal associate of Lord Chaitanya. Quote, "In the religion of the Yavanas, there is the word esk. Does this word mean pure spiritual love or not? That was my question. The saintly Goswami is learned in all scriptures. Saintly Goswami is learned in all scriptures, and he is especially learned in the language of the Yavanas. In that language, his learning has no limit. Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, and many other learned scholars were also present in that assembly. Saintly Srila Sanatan Goswami kindly replied in these words, 'Yes, the word esk means love. When the Yavanas worship God, they use the word esk. However, esk is often used to mean material love also. Examples of this may be seen in the history of Layala Manjana and the writings of Hafiz. The Yavanacharyas could not understand the true meaning of spiritual life. When they write esk, they mean love in terms of either the gross or subtle material bodies. However, they could not distinguish between material love and pure spiritual love, and they could not understand pure love for Lord Krishna. I have not seen an accurate description of spiritual love in any of the books of the Yavana teachers. I have seen them only in the books describing the Vaishnava religion. The Yavana teachers use the word lu to describe the pure individual soul. However, they could not understand the soul in truth. They used the word ru to describe the conditioned souls bound by maya. That was all they could understand. I have not seen a description of pure love for Lord Krishna in any but the Vaishnava religion. Generally speaking, pure love for Krishna is described only in the books of Vaishnava religion. Pure love for Lord Krishna is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. I am confident that before Sri Krishna Chaitanya came to this world, no one had given a complete description of pure love for Lord Krishna. If you have faith in my words, then you may accept this conclusion. After hearing these instructions again and again, I offered Dandavat obeisances to Srila Sanatana Goswami. At that time, the saintly sannyasi offered Dandavat obeisances. So, just as there's only one sun, there's only one religion. Because religion means is that you must understand the nature of something. So the pure nature of God, He is the Lord, and He is to be served. And the pure nature of the soul is that He is servant. So then, real religion means when the soul serves God on a transcendental platform, no material considerations. So that, therefore, any religion that professes that, then that is correct. Because it's just anyone who is saying that is the correct religion. Because that is the Vaishnava religion. Vaishnava means one who worships Vishnu. So, but if they make up other things because they're interested in Dharma, Artha, and Kama, or Moksha, then there'll be some problems. It'll be mixed. So you have the Vaishnava religion mixed with the modes of nature. So it's not that there are many religions. There's only one religion. And so it's just a matter of what languages they use, what words they use, how they describe it, that may seemingly make difference, but there should be no difference. So if there is a difference, then it's considered pure in how close it comes to the proper transcendental Vaishnava consideration, Hare Krishna. Like that. So the Bhagavatam then gives very clearly this direction. When it says here that completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. So religious activities that are purely for pleasing the Lord, then that is considered pure religion. But if they're approaching the Lord for material benefit, then it's not considered pure. Like that. So that is how one tells the difference.
Excuse me.
Yes.
What is the Yuga Dharma and the Kali Yuga is when chanting the Mahaprabhu does not descend?
It's also chanting the Holy Name.
It's propounded
by? By means the avatar will always be Chaitanya and will always be golden. Like that. You can move forward a little bit like that. Because the ladies will sit back there. So then, it's just like every Dwapara Yuga, the avatar is black, and his name is Krishna. But it won't, only once in a day of Brahma does Swayam Krishna come. So Chaitanya always comes, but only once in a day of Brahma is it Swayam Chaitanya. Right? In other words, Krishna from Braja and Chaitanya from that, also from Goloka, from Navadvipa. Otherwise, there will be an avatar, a Vishnu avatar. And it will let Harinam Sankirtan will then open the doors to Vaikuntha. But only once in a day of Brahma, then it's open to go to Braja Vrindavan. Does that make sense? Any other questions on this aspect of religion?
You mentioned that before Lord Chaitanya appeared, no one actually distributed the pure love of Godhead, pure love to Krishna. But before, say, like Krishna appeared, and there were many devotees constantly preaching. So, what is the difference? What is the uniqueness of Lord Chaitanya's teaching?
Well, in this case, then it's pure unalloyed. That's why we make a distinction between pure devotion and pure unalloyed devotion. Because the residence of Vaikuntha, that would also be considered pure devotion. But because there's a desire for liberation, right, there is some desire. No, it's a spiritual desire. But it's their own desire. You know, whether Krishna approves of it or not, it's their desire. But because it's spiritual, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so they were worshipping Vishnu but want to be on the same planet. Or they want to have the same form or same opulences or be an intimate associate. This is their desire. But for the pure unalloyed devotees, they don't have this desire. Whatever pleases Krishna, if it pleases him that we stay here, then that's what we do. If we're going to be close associates, then that's what will happen. But otherwise, whatever pleases him. Pure unalloyed devotion means that it's only to please Krishna, like that. And if he is pleased, then we are pleased. So that is the position. Is that
Yeah,
sense?
Thank you.
Anything else, please? After hearing these instructions again and again, I offered Dandavada obeisances to Srila Sanatana Goswami. At that time, the saintly sannyasi offered Dandavada obeisances. It says here no one had given a complete description of pure love for Krishna. It doesn't say that no one gave. It says no one gave a complete description. Uh-huh. Like that. In other words, it was not fully described. Uh-huh. See, because in the Vedic literatures, there's so many... Depending upon what you're trying to establish, then you take something from a particular angle. Right? So then from this, then you get many, many angles. So then one may get confused and then say, which one of these is right? They're all right, because they're describing the same thing, but from different angles of vision. So then, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, of these, this one's the essential one. From this one you can understand the others, because they're all there, and so there's confusion. Okay. But when you show which is the root one, then the other ones all fall into place. Then you can see how they're all connected. But otherwise, if you take this one, then there's something it doesn't fit, this one doesn't fit, that one it doesn't fit, seemingly. Mm. But when you know which is the actual one, so that's, Lord Chaitanya has done that with so many, like how many Vishnu murtis are there? Because some say more, some say less. How many elements in the world are there? Some say more, some say less. You know, what does tri mean? You know, so then he explained that as Sambandavide and Prayojana. Like that, because some will take tri, meaning the Veda, the Vedangas and Upangas. They'll take that as tri, or they'll take it as Rig, Yajur, and Sam. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like this, or they'll take it like so many different ways it may be taken. But then here he's explaining what these different things mean, and then everything falls into place. Like that. So the description Lord Chaitanya gives us is complete, like that. And also then he takes it right up into the details of service to Krishna, what that means, what is the mood of the Vrajavasis, what is their, because that's the most essential. You may know technique, but if you don't know what is the proper way to apply that technique, it won't work for you properly. You won't get the same result. Does that Like that. So any ritual, you have to know what's the mood of performing that ritual. Any knowledge, you have to know what is the mood in applying that knowledge. Otherwise, then you may get a different result.
So the mood, like Lord Chaitanya describes, is like basically just purely for Krishna's pleasure. And then the Vaikuntha, there is some tinge of kind of like wanting for liberation.
Yeah, it means liberation means that you want to be free from the material world, and you have something you want to gain. Something you want to gain. Because in the material world, everybody, you see, someone does an activity simply for gain. Right? It means you only act when there's a result you want. So you see a result, then you act. That's the natural position. No one works without wanting a result. So now, because of this, then it's pure, but it's not pure unalloyed. Because it's pure, meaning it's transcendental. It's not pure unalloyed.
And the Pirgas is also they have desire.
They have desire, but the desire is simply to please what makes Krishna happy.
Yeah, okay.
Therefore, it's pure unalloyed. It's not their idea. Because if Krishna, you say, I want to always be an intimate associate of Krishna, that means you always have to be with him. So, but Krishna, we find, he gets great pleasure out of being separated from his intimate devotees, because it increases their affection. And increases the depth of rasa. So then if you say that, then it's the same. It's exactly the same form, then that's nice, because if there's anything that, what do you say, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. But at the same time, then it limits, all the different ways that you can deal with the Lord. Right? It means if the cows look like Krishna, it's really hard to, Krishna to herd a whole bunch of Krishnas out into the field, then it looks kind of funny that this Krishna eats ladus and those Krishnas eat grass, So, it's just, there may be difference in the form, Mother Yashoda will look different than Sridham, They'll look different than, Madhu Mangal, he'll be different, right? The elder gopis will look different from the younger gopis, right? The elder cowherd, men will look different from the cowherd boys. So this way then there's something. Because in Vaikuntha, that's Sarupya Mukti. The only way you can tell the difference between the devotees and the Lord is the Srivatsa hair. It has that one white hair on his chest. So that's the only way you can tell the difference. Otherwise they look exactly the same. So then the variety in rasas is limited. Like that. So, because the devotee wants to deal with the Lord in that way, therefore the Lord reciprocates in that way, and he's happy, because it is on the transcendental platform. On the material world, he also reciprocates, but it's on the material platform. They approach him for something material, and so they may get that something material. But there's no, the taste is very minimal. It's much more, the Vaikuntha, the relationship there is much more deep, much more intimate. But then we see in Braja, it's even more than that. It's pure unalloyed.
But as you said that the knowledge may be there, but the mood how to apply it is not there. Let us stop by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
No, I'm just saying the mood is important. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya gives which mood to take if you want to get pure unalloyed devotion. Otherwise, we do the same things that the Shris and Madhvas do. We even do many of the things we do the same as the Shankarites do. Or the same as the Shaktas do. When it comes to Achman, everybody does the same Achman. When it comes to washing their hands after eating, they all do that. Everybody eats with their right hand. They sit down, they put the plate on the ground, they put the rice on top of that, they eat it with the dal and the sun. Everybody does that. It doesn't matter who they are. So those all may look the same. Even the activities that detach one from the material world will look the same. Right? They'll look the same. Because you're trying to get to the same. Just like, let's say, we want to go out this door. Right? Everybody in this room wants to get out this door. But everybody in this room has a different thing they're going to do once they're beyond that door. Somebody's going to turn to the left and sit down at this seat, someone to the right, someone will go to the next room, someone will go out the side door. Right? Someone will even go out that room and then go outside. So just because that, does that mean we're all... So from here to the door, we're all following the same path. So from material conditioning to liberation, you find many are following the same path, because there's only one system of liberation. Krishna says it's one path. Right? So you're moving forward on it. So if you're going farther, you say you're going... It's just like here. We get on the bus here at Hulagat, down at Hulagat here, right? And we're going to Calcutta. Right? So along that road, somebody is only going up to, you know, Dabulia. They get off there. Someone to Krishnagar, someone to Shantipur, someone to Ranagat, someone to Jaguli. Right? But it's only one road. You understand the difference? But because of the difference, they will be considered, the passengers will be considered differently, and they'll have to pay differently. Right? So if you want to follow this one path to Braja, the price is different than if you want to follow the same path up to Dwarka or up to Vaikuntha. You understand? So there'll be some difference. If you're only going from here to Dabulia, you know, or up to the Yogpit here, then you don't mind standing. Standing is quite is part of that poverty. It's not bad. But if you're going all the way to Calcutta, it would be considered more proper to get a seat. You understand? So those things that'll be more favorable if you're going to different places. You understand?
So the mood, so the knowledge is there, plus the mood was also there, or was it just propounded for the first time?
I mean, there's so many different aspects of the mood, so then which one to take, that's one thing. So at the same time is, then the mood of Braja was not shown before.
Okay. But the knowledge is there.
Knowledge of there is of the whole spiritual subject matter, but knowledge of Braja, that particular love for Krishna, that was not there. Means Radha and Krishna worship is there, it's described in the Puranas. Like that, it's described in the Bhagavatam. But to understand what that means, that only Lord Chaitanya's devotees understand. Means those who are Vaikuntha, you know, they're going to Vaikuntha. Like in the Braja Lila, they won't necessarily be able to make distinctions between the various devotees that are mentioned, because names aren't given. You know? The Rasa dancers will say, you know, when Krishna came back, then immediately one group rushed forward, and another group stayed back. You know, some said like this, oh, we, you know, we're so, why did you do this? We were feeling so bad, and this and that. And another group, they spoke differently. Right? So then you just know all these different groupies had all these different things to say, but it's just one group of gopis. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers can distinguish between all these. You know, which one is Lalita, which one is Vishaka, which one is the other gopis, which one is this, what Radharani says, all these different things. So they can tell. So it's not that complete description is not given. It's general. Krishna and the gopis. So that description could be applied either to Swayam Krishna or not to Swayam Krishna.
Even Vaikuntha, there exists Krishna which is not with all these associates, which is not in the Vraja mood.
Yes.
But Vaikuntha is just Vishnu, isn't it? Vaikuntha is generally Vishnu, isn't it?
Vaikuntha means basically what is outside of Vraja. Dwarka is also considered Vaikuntha. like that. But you say the Vaikuntha planets, that's separate. But Vaikuntha means basically from Dwarka on down. That's the general definition. Vaikuntha means that the worship of the Lord carries the flavor of rules and regulations. You know, it's the taste that's there. In Vaikuntha planets, then Krishna is God. And so everybody there is only servant. So even Lakshmi is there, but there are no other devotees in a conjugal mood, and even her mood is that of servant. It's very, very formal. But in Dwarka, they just see him as a family member. So all the five rasas are there. But there's still those rules and regulations are followed. Krishna, in the morning, he gets up, goes, you know, takes his bath, goes and does all his duties. All these different things are there. Everyone relates to him in that way.
So the other Krishnas are referred to basically Dwarka Krishna.
It's not Dwarka Krishna. It is Vrindavan that is in the mood of rules and regulations.
Vrindavan also.
There is a Vrindavan that is in this mood of rules and regulations. See, these points, you either understand them or you don't. Because by knowledge, you're not going to get them.
But it exists.
It exists. That's why you have to follow very carefully Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, or you'll end up there rather than Braja. That's why they say Braja Radha Krishna. Because there is Radha Krishna that's not Braja Radha Krishna. It's Vrindavan, but it's you know, opulence is prominent. See, Vrindavan is the most opulent place. But the Brajavasis don't notice the opulence. But you see descriptions of Vrindavan, it's always talking about the beauty, not the opulence. But the opulence is so much more than Vaikuntha. The opulence of Vaikuntha is coming from the dust of Vrindavan. The dust of Vrindavan is Chintamani. Like that. So from Chintamani comes the wealth of Vaikuntha. But in Vrindavan, they're so absorbed in love for Krishna that nobody cares about the wealth there. It means that the Surabhi cows can give anything, but they only take some milk. You know, the trees are kalpavriksha. You could take anything from them, but they just take some fruit. They don't need anything. You know, we see that Vishishta. Then when Vishwamitra came, he was a king at that time, and had a long history of just trying to become very established as the most prominent. You know, he wanted whatever was the highest position. He wanted that. So with time, he had become a king, and so then, as a king, he was moving, and then when it came to the ashram of Vishishta, then he saw that this sage, then with his Sarabi cow, then created all facility for his whole army and fed everybody and everything like this. So then he was very impressed with this, so he figured, you know, something as wonderful as this should naturally be in the possession of the king. So then he asked for the cow, you know, and so then, because the king wanted it, then Vishishta didn't want to say no. But because Vishishta's there and he's doing his study and these things, then Sarabhi, she can produce anything he needs for the yajna. Right? Because for yajna you need, you know, milk and you need ghee and you need you know, kusa grass and flowers. And so she can produce all that. So just with one cow, then everything is taken care of. So then Vishwamitra was, you know, demanding the cow. And so then he didn't want to say no. So then Surabhi then asked, are you displeased with me? Therefore, you're letting me go. And he explained, no, said, oh, we're very happy. You know, it means he is the king, so he is asking for these. So then, therefore, he should keep next to the door. So, therefore, if you like, then you can stay. You know, I'm not asking that you go. But as soon as she heard the word stay, she didn't even bother listening to the rest of the sentence. She just grew to a monstrous size, huge size, and then from all different parts of her body started coming armies. One Akshahini of Yavanas, one Akshahini of Malechas, one Akshahini of other tribal madmen, and like this. And then they just chased Vishwamitra and his army for, I think, 80 miles. You know, they just chased him completely. So then when Vishwamitra saw this, then he decided that, you know, the power, the prowess of the Kshatriyas is useless compared to the power of the Brahmanas. So therefore he decided to become a Brahmin. Like that. And naturally then Vashishtha was his rival because of this. So then we can see that the Surabhi cows, they can produce anything. You know, they don't have, they're not limited to only milk. Like that. So but the residents of Vaikuntha, they don't care. They only take milk. Why bother with anything else in Vrindavan? So like that. Then the opulence is there, but no one talks about it. Well, in Dwarka, then opulence is part of the thing. Because if they're greatly opulent, it proves they're the big, greatest kings. Their kingdom's the most powerful, most opulent, most wonderful. And when you hear descriptions of you know, the kingly places, you always hear of the opulence. You know, when you hear Hastinapur or Indraprastha or Dwarka described, you always hear the opulence. You know, how the roadway is very broad and huge parks down the middle, and there's the scent of aloe and other fragrances are blowing everywhere. You're on the street, you can smell it. It's so much fragrance. It's not just in someone's house. So many temples, you know, the houses are all white, made out of, you know, wonderful marble, and all these different things. They're all described. You always hear that. But in Vrindavan, generally, you don't hear it talking about that at all. Though it's so opulent, that other places you don't even hear of. You know, they have the, you know, these carvings, like an emerald of parrots. And real parrots come and sit down next to them and think that they're real parrots. You know, the carving is so perfect. You know? And so the only thing that, if it was somewhere else, everyone would be looking, wow, just, you know, what a nice thing, this, that. No, but there they just laugh that the parrot thought the carved parrot was real. To them, that's the only specific value of it. Like that. You have trees that are, you know, it's like you have crystal trees. The tree itself is just made of crystal. It's a solid crystal tree. It has emerald leaves, ruby fruits, like that. You don't hear of that kind of opulence in Vaikuntha. You know, it's just not there in Vaikuntha. Yeah. But I'm saying it's just because they're the original personalities, therefore all the opulence is there. But the opulence is not what is in the consciousness of the Lord and the devotees. Rasa is the what's on the consciousness. In Vaikuntha, then that opulence is part of the rasa. But in Vrindavan, it's not an important part of the rasa. Sweetnesses. You hear always talk about the nice clouds and the wonderful breezes, and you hear about the creepers and the trees and the flowers and the fruits and like that. That's what you hear about. Like that, because the most important thing is rasa. Yeah, you understand?
So what is the purpose of this Vrindavan, which is up here?
Because a lot of people worship Radha and Krishna in rules and regulations. You see, many people, they worship Krishna and they do all the things. But they're not necessarily devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So they worship Radha and Krishna. It's very common in North India, worship of Radha and Krishna is very common. You find generally they either worship Radha and Krishna or they worship Sitaram. And that's North India, like that. I think South also is quite common, like that. So they worship, but without Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, then they only know that aspect. They don't know about the Raja Prema. Why, you have some plan or something?
Yeah, in this case.
Generally not. Why? Well, means they're happy there, so why they would go somewhere else?
That's their original constitutional position.
Basically.
There's no chance they would hear also of Guru Kundalini. It's just
Vrindavan, you don't, I mean, by Kunti, you generally don't hear. So then.
But if the original constitution position of the soul is such an ananda, then it should be full of knowledge. So it should also know about Guru Kundalini.
That's a different kind of knowledge. Knowledge is rasa.
Knowledge is rasa.
Well, that's the end of the line, isn't it? Which is more important for the nuclear physicist? His family or his job?
His job.
The job. So then if his wife dies and everything like that, he has no problem. Yeah. So therefore, it's just, that's part of the thing. So knowledge is limited when it comes to rasa. There's no knowledge. Right? You get a young boy and girl together in a very opulent place, will they notice the opulence? No, they just notice each other. Right? If the relationship has matured something, then the two of them can walk around and appreciate the opulence. And when the intensity of the attraction between them is so strong, they won't notice whatever's going on. They don't notice if it's raining, if it's hot, cold, they don't notice anything.
So that means what we're getting now is just costless mercy, there's no...
Yeah, that's basically it. We're rat bags that don't deserve anything, and so that we're getting this mercy anyway. Lord Chaitanya, you know, gives this to the most fallen. So if we're getting this, then it puts us, we can understand where our place is. He first saves the most fallen, right? So when you see him getting around to saving the most topmost pure pious people, right, and you come at that time, then maybe one can consider one's not the lowest. But if one is coming before such people, then we can understand that we're not necessarily coming from the best position.
I didn't get it much, you said?
Then you're too pious to get this.
Then you said the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pious?
Yeah, payash, you know, you take rice and milk and you cook it together with some sugar. It's causeless mercy. That's the point. It's causeless mercy. It means that we're not even looking for that, but we're being offered that. We're simply wanting to know why we're here, who are we, why we're suffering, that's all. So we're somehow or another a little bit turning towards God. And for that little bit of turning, we've been given the opportunity to enter into the pastimes of Vrindavan. So the comparison is nothing. We're just in a bit of an anxiety about something material and wanting a solution to the material anxiety, which we expected a material solution. Like that, but instead we're being given the topmost spiritual, you know, opportunity. So that's causeless mercy.
So if somebody does not attain Krishna Prema in this life, so would the same thing be available? I mean, what would happen? Like, would it continue since it says once it starts on this path?
Yeah, it means one would be transferred to whatever situation that would be favorable for one's advancement. So whether that's in this universe or another universe, it'll be arranged. But that's Krishna's arrangement. For him, it's no big deal.
But we would be able to, be practicing in the same Vrajambo?
Yeah. Okay. Means Lord Chaitanya's, means the pastimes of in the material world of him is eternal. Means as soon as he finishes here, he goes to the next universe, the next universe, the next universe. That continues around. Then after another day of Brahma, it will again manifest here in this universe. So again, the pastime will come. So it's always available. But it's just where, that's all. Just whether you'll, whether the soul has to be here or, you know, in another universe. Plus it goes on here for some time. Pastimes generally go, means the whole Sankirtan mission is going for 10,000 years. So during that time one can take advantage. You know, that's of course if one doesn't get distracted to the heavenly planets. Unfortunately that's also about 10,000 years. So then by the time you get back here it's already gone, the show's over. Then you gotta go to another universe.
I always thought that the Raja, this thing, was available to all the living entities.
It's available to all living entities, but who's taking? Like you go to a shop, okay? You go downtown to a big store that sells, you know, priceless gems. It's, the door is open for anybody. Anybody can walk in and buy them. It's just whether who wants to pay the price, that's all.
But it's not available to so many other living entities, isn't it? Like, because we are in this age and this thing, we get it, otherwise?
If they want it, they'll be here. People are exactly where they want to be, that's all. And the same thing goes on all the time. That's another thing so we should understand, is that what's going on in Kali Yuga right now is the same thing that went on in the last Kali Yuga, the same thing went on in the Kali Yuga before, and the same thing went on in the Kali Yuga before that, and the same thing will go on in the next Kali Yuga. It's the same old crud. It's not something new or different. The mode is just adjusted to fulfill the desires that the living entity has. Understand? It means someone has a desire now, and they perform whatever nonsense they do, they'll go to hell. And when they finish with hell and going through all the species of life that they're supposed to go through, then they'll be put back in exactly the same position that they were, that they went to hell from. So they'll be put back in the same situation. Right? You understand? So that means then you have to have the same things, because that's what the desires were. You understand?
You go through all the pious activities and come back to the same position.
Sinful. Okay.
It's sinful. Also same pious, they come back. They always come back. So then, means it's the same stuff going on. Right? It's just like if someone kills an animal, then for every hair on the animal's body that many times, they will be killed. Right? So then, that means then you have to have a reoccurring situation which that opportunity is there. Alright? Means this lifetime there's somebody, he's killing the animal. Next lifetime the animal is killing him. But it has to be the same situation. Right? So therefore you have to recreate the same nonsense. You know, we think it's something new and unique. Just like every youth thinks that they're new and unique and their outlook on the world is fresh and different than all these old fuddy-duddies don't know what's going on. Right? Every generation is like that. And then when they get older, then then the older generation knows, oh, it's just these young guys think, because they know it's all the same. Right? So we have the tendency to think that because we're doing it, this is unique. This Kali Yuga is unique, it's special, it's the same old stuff. So even this idea of non-Vedic this, that, it's non-Vedic. It's arranged for people who aren't interested in the Vedic knowledge or culture. But it's being arranged by the modes of nature. And the modes of nature are controlled by Maya. And Maya is as Vedic as you can get. Right? She's a nice, chaste woman who sits there with her husband and rides around on the back of his pole and lives under a tree. Right? And she follows all the Vedic rules very carefully. She's the best at it. Right? So so where's the question of anything being out of the purview of the Vedic control? You know? It means what is In other words, Krishna is in control. But we're something that's new, different, therefore we have to adjust our lifestyles, adjust our views, visions, change Krishna consciousness to meet the contemporary. So the contemporary system is just going on by the modes. Right? America 4 months ago, very liberal, wild, you know, not worrying about anything. And then just suddenly one day they're super patriotic and the liberals are out there, you know, they're right next to the conservatives saying, you know, we're going to get this guy. One day. That's all. Something sold, the contemporary situation we have to adjust. And the contemporary system will adjust in a moment when Krishna wants it to. You know, when Maya, okay, we've tasted this enough, now it's not even taste this. Right? Like it's a man walking a dog, right? The dog thinks it's, you know, sniffing everything, doing everything at once. But the man's walking where he wants to go. He goes up this street, then he turns down that street. And the dog thinks because it can run around on the leash a bit, ah, wow, hey, new speed, look, check this out, hey, this is fresh. You know. But and they think that it's theirs, but it's not. It's not their ration. They're being walked around on a leash. So the modes of nature just walk us around. You've done this enough, and now the next thing is this. You know, now we're going to turn the corner, and it's going to go like this. But the living entity, because of his pride, he thinks it's special. It's something, you know, different. Because we're doing it, it must be special, unique, right? So that's the thing. That's why it always comes back to this point of humility. If we're humble, then we don't worry about all these things. We don't get involved in all these things. We know that we're just Krishna's servant, and whatever situation we're in, we should serve Krishna. You know, whether it's contemporary or Vedic or mixed or this, whatever it is, we just try to serve Krishna. Then that becomes the real religion that this is talking about here. Then it becomes the real religion. Otherwise, then it's our religion. Because contemporary religion is created by the individuals. I've seen there are communities of devotees. The only people living in the place are devotees. There's no one else there, no karmis. And everybody's kid is watching television, wearing karmi clothes, playing karmi games, not involved in Krishna consciousness. Right? And if you ask them why, then it says, what can I do? Because my kid, you know, has to be able to fit into the culture. And the other kids are doing it. And then you go to the next parents, why your kid is like that? They'll say the same thing. But they're a group of devotees, and there's no reason that they can't evolve a different whole ethic on how they do. It's always natural they do this. There are karmis, hardcore, nonsense, rascal karmis. They don't have televisions in their house. They won't let their kids do all these things. Just karmis. They know it's stupid. Right? The term one-eyed guru and, you know, and what do you call it? They call it boob tube and all these kind of like names for the television. You know, how you call it? Couch potato. These are not devotee terms. These are karmi terms. They know it's stupid. They know it's crazy.
Idiot box.
Idiot box, yeah, that's the good one. Idiot box. Right? It means they've done tests. Your brain waves are at the same state as when you're dreaming, when you watch television. That's why one is so susceptible to all the advertisement. You know, you just see that and then you want to buy that thing. They told you it's important, without it you're going to die, so therefore you want it. You know, it's like a dream. If you can remember your dreams, then, you know, you might try to act according to them. So they know. There's tons of them. So it's not that it can't be done, but there's no determination. So the whole point is we can change things. It's just the modes of nature are doing things. And if we just go along with it, then what's the credit? Means whatever the situation, we use it for Krishna. That's the real thing. We're supposed to use it for Krishna. That's in our control. Right? That's in our control. Because you'll see, the kid can do so many things as long as it's within the realm of our own conditioning. right? If we used to watch television and go out with the girls and, you know, smoke a little dope and wear crazy clothes and all that, that's okay. But if we didn't take heroin and our kid starts to take heroin, then we'll say, hey, this is crazy, this has got to stop. Right? Or if we weren't into stealing and all, and they start stealing, hey, this is nonsense. You know, or if we were just, you know, in one thing and then they joined a motorcycle gang and we didn't hang out, we'll go, hey, this is crazy. You'll see, immediately they'll say, no, fight this, that, and then there'll be a whole fight in the family and the kid will walk out on the parents and this and that. How come they didn't say anything before? Oh, no, you have to adjust, you have to be liberal, you have to understand, you have to this, you have to that. As long as it was within my realm of conditioning. In other words, my religion. But if they take up another religion, they take up Hell's Angels, or they take up, you know, other things, then that's nonsense. So you see, it's not this whole idea of contemporary. What's contemporary? Right? Contemporary means 8,400,000 aspects, totally different worlds, are all going on in the human world. Right? We say, oh, this is what's going on. How many white people are there? Right? And how many white people will be considered, you know, really upbeat? Right? Africans don't count. South Americans don't count. Central Americans don't count. Right? Asians don't count. Even the East Bloc doesn't count. Right? And even many will kind of like, well, Canada doesn't really count. Right? Right? And then within that, then there'll be some considerations, you know. Everybody thinks the Australians are a little weird. Americans are just crazy. English are, you know, too stuffy. And, you know, continental Europeans are also a bit too conservative. You know, each one will say the other one's this. So, what is the world? Right? There's some people, golf is their world. They have golf shoes, golf pants, golf hats, golf this, golf that. All they do all day is, you know, practice putting and all this kind of stuff. They read golf magazines, they talk golf. They go to golf resorts. Right?
Recently somebody's propounding golf as the way to nirvana. Recently I read that somebody's propounding golf as the way to nirvana.
Golf, yeah, of course. you can golf is
I think it's Deepak Chopra.
That's right. Whatever it is, it's whatever he's into. Zen means you take anything and use it as a medium for somebody wrote this book. They took the whole Gita and turned it into a golf match. Like that. I don't remember what the name is. Something Juna? I don't remember. But it's a Bhagavad Gita, but it's a golf match. You know, he's out there doing the golf and he gets his ball gets stuck into one of those sand pits, he can't get out, so he gives up. He puts down his golf glove and it's not going to golf anymore. Right? And then his caddy, right? You know, I can't remember what his caddy's name was. Yeah, Bagger Van. A guy named Bagger Van.
Bhagavan.
He's his golf caddy, right? And so he then teaches them the science of the perfect swing. And by this, then he again, you know, stands up, takes his golf club, and then he gets himself out, and this way he's successful. You know, and plus there's so many others on the green who are his, you know, rivals, who are trying to win the match. And so he has to conquer over all of them. So probably Chopra read that book and now is saying golf to nirvana.
You're saying what different cultures?
Yeah, so I mean, what is the real world? You go into any shop, there's 300 magazines. You know, anybody reads them all? If you want to be real contemporary, you got to sit down and buy all of them, read all of them, and be into all of them. Then you can say you're contemporary. But what do? You take your magazines you want and think all the rest is stupid. But the other person doesn't take your magazines, takes some and thinks your magazines are stupid. So therefore, that means contemporary life is stupid. Even the people that are in the contemporary world think it's stupid. Not the part they're in, but everything else. So that means the common principle is contemporary life is stupid. That's the common principle. And then we're supposed to buy into that? Right? So we have to be very, very careful. Is that Krishna sets the standard. So there's only one religion. Otherwise we'll make up our own religion. Right? The people that are into bicycles, it's their religion. They're into their cars, it's their religion. You know, they're into their home and gardens, it's their religion, right? You know, whatever it is, that's their religion for them. It has so many rules and regulations and how you interact and how you deal and what's your language. It's their religion. So here it's saying is real religion is the Vaishnava religion. So the Vaishnava religion then is that which completely rejects all religious activities which are materially motivated. Right? This Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth. So if there's a material motive, then that religious system is not perfect. Right? Religion just means something that regulates your life to bring it in line with some nature, right? You want to be a bikey, then there's a nature you have to be a bikey. Right? You have to be able to condition yourself to wear a pair of pants for 1 year and never wash them. Right? If you wash them, you can't be a bikey. Like that. So it's a nature. You know? It's a nature.
How one attains the Braja mood?
That's the whole thing, is then following the footsteps of, you know, the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how they understand and follow Lord Chaitanya's direction. Because Lord Chaitanya has given this, and so they teach how to follow it properly. That's the trick. Because if one doesn't follow according to the parampara, one won't get. Like sahajis won't get. Like that. They're not trusted. Like that. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals that sahajiyas, because they take things cheap. They make up their own religion, basically. So the Brajavasis don't trust them, so they won't let them into the pastimes. Because you get into the pastimes through the devotees. So through them, they invite you in. So if they don't trust you, why they'll invite you in?
So it's the mercy of the Vaishnavas.
Yeah, that's why the whole thing always comes back to the devotees. It's always the thing. Everything comes back to the devotees.
So then by pleasing them, service and...
Yeah. The most important service is vani, service to the instruction.
And it's basically... Hearing and chanting.
Yeah, hearing and chanting and trying to apply what they've taught. That's the most important.
You're saying that when we should follow the footsteps of the devotees, then we have our conditioned nature, and even when we try to follow the footsteps, then still we carry our own understanding and our own perception, whatever we do. So then how can we be sure that we actually follow the footsteps and not creating our own path or something like that?
We have to follow according to how they say we should follow. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Otherwise we follow in our own way. Just like you see so many people feel they're following in the footsteps of the Goswamis by wearing little pieces of cloth and sitting in Govardhan and, you know, talking all kinds of, you know, nice leelas, and they feel they're following the... But that's imitating, it's not following. Following means doing what they say. So they say is, you know, that you have to practice properly the process of devotional service. Rupa Goswami gave that whole process. And details of that. And the acharyas have commented on that to give finer and finer detail of how that should be followed. So if you focus on that, then that is there. That is important. Plus the, you know, how they say, yeah, means that's it. But we have to understand where we're at, what is our level, and work there, not work on a, you know, how you say, in a level that we don't belong in. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, if we're working on a level that's above us, it's not natural for us to be in.
We have to see where we're naturally situated, work there and progress. Mm-hmm. If we jump, then we'll have a problem. Okay? Because it's like the platform of Bhav Sadhana means that you have to be liberated. You have to be in the Brahma Buddha platform to make it work. But if you take Bhav Sadhana and practice it as a neophyte, then that's sahaja, that's cheap. Mm-hmm. So then that's not, one won't get much from it. And it's nice, one's thinking about Krishna, but at the same time, it's for our own pleasure, not for Krishna's pleasure. Like that. So then that becomes, that's the problem. So one has to see what position we're in and take it from there. And in doing that, we associate with devotees and get their opinion and direction. Then we can see. You know, we see the example, we see the direction, and we take help from others. You know, so we have to use our own intelligence, but at the same time we should also take input from others.
Mm-hmm. Is Krishna very clear? Let's say, my concern is, I like to study, but Srila also wants that we push on this mission. So, does Krishna make it very clear when he wants us to do something? Or, because I don't want to be complacent and just study for my own pleasure. But is there a point where Krishna is going to make it really clear, okay, now you've studied enough, now you can engage that in preaching? Or, you know, how does one...
You may. That another thing is, well, why do you study? What's your purpose in studying? Because you're only going to study if you have some purpose in mind. So what is that purpose? You know, in other words, if basically, that purpose... Huh?
Basically, to make my intelligence more firm and to be able to help others.
Yeah. So helping others, then that's the preacher. You know, so as long as that's the purpose, then when there's an opportunity to help others, then we'll take it. Like that. Because study always goes on. Study doesn't end. Study is always an ongoing thing. Means a teacher is always a student. As soon as a teacher is not a student anymore, he's not actually a very good teacher. Because then you're not in contact anymore, so you don't know how the process is functioning. Like that, you move out of the realm of teaching. So then, not being in touch with it, you can't necessarily speak to others, help others. Like that, so one always has to be learning. That makes sense. Yeah? Okay. Anything else on this? Or we'll keep continuing?
Okay.
Then the Paramahamsa Babaji said, "O great devotee, now I will answer your second question. Please listen with an attentive mind." The words, "The creation of the individual soul," or "the fashioning of the individual soul," are all manifested by the illusory potency Maya. They are material words that describe inanimate material things. In other words, he's saying here the soul, to say the soul is created or is made is a material concept. That's what he's saying here. They are material words that describe inanimate material things. The three divisions of time are 1. Past, 2. Present, and 3. Future. These divisions refer to material time, time within the realm of the illusory potency Maya. In the spiritual world, the present exists eternally. In the spiritual world, the past and future do not exist. Lord Krishna and the individual soul exist in that eternal present.
In this way, the individual soul is eternal, and his original nature, which is his pure love for Lord Krishna, is also eternal. Talk of the individual soul being created or fashioned is a misconception. Mistakenly imposing the time patterns of the inanimate world on a spiritual entity. The atomic individual soul is spiritual and eternal. He existed before his entrance into the material world. Because in the spiritual world there is no past or future. Whatever exists there exists in an eternal present. Therefore the soul and its nature are both eternal. They exist in that eternal present. I am only describing this in words. Your understanding will depend on your ability to understand the pure spiritual world. I can only give a hint here. Right? So here is the point. Is the knowledge has a limit. How to understand that. In spiritual trance, you will be able to see all this directly. The logic and argument of this material world will not help you to understand it. Your ability to directly perceive the spiritual world beyond the realm of matter will depend on how much you can loosen the shackles of material bondage. And that's why there's so much emphasis put on following Vaidhi Sadhana to the point where you actually purify yourself. Because the degree you're purified, then you can actually see the spiritual world. If you're not pure, doesn't matter what process you practice, you won't see the spiritual world. If we're impure and we take up the advanced stages of devotional service, we won't see anything. It may appear we see something, but what we see is not of great significance, right? We read, you know, one book and it's nice, and then we read, you know, these very advanced literatures and they're a little nicer. But to us, they're only a little nicer. You give that same book to an advanced devotee, and it's like merging into an ocean of nicer. You know, it's like somebody doesn't know how to drive at all. They wouldn't have a clue. But, you know, they have to, you know, drive a, you know, some fancy car, a very special, you know, car to learn to drive. You know, because they say, well, because it's better. I feel more comfortable, you know, the seats and the steering wheel and more. But it doesn't make any real difference. It may be a touch difference. But someone who knows how to drive in that, then they can take very great advantage of the facilities that are there. So the thing is that without this, without the how we can loosen the material bondage, then we won't get out. So that's what sadhana bhakti is for. So sadhana bhakti that's performed in the mood of detachment to please Krishna will free us from the material contamination. Then we're able to see the advanced. You know, then we'll be able to see within the seemingly simple fundamental basics advanced topic. Fundamental, see, sometimes we take in the material world, fundamental generally means basic. That's generally how we tend to translate. So basic means beginner. You know, basic means common. So as we become more and more developed, the natural things we know, rarer and rarer knowledge that less, fewer and fewer people can understand. And then we feel satisfied that we're moving ahead very dynamically. But if we actually check, that's just detail that is, you know, adding to the depth of the principle, the fundamental. Right? So fundamental is the real thing, and the other things are added to that. Right? You know, just like, let's say we have a meal. Fundamental is the plate, you know, and a sitting place, and all these different things, and then you have your meal. So then if we get into the thing as well, all these are not important, the fundamentals, we want to get to the, you know, the real. You know, so then you try, you know, serving your meal without plates, without a place to sit, without anything. How are you going to do it? Eat out of the pots? You know, that's called, hot cuisine or something. You know, it's like very fancy cuisine is going into the kitchen and eating straight out of the pots with your hands or something. No, you require the whole thing. Without, then that has some meaning.
So the whole thing is you have to create the situation in which you can appreciate the higher stuff. Therefore, sambandhyan, that is foundational. You have to know who you are, who God is, who the material world is. Then you can appreciate the relationship like that. So that's, it's a very, very essential point. You know? But, so that's the thing, is the logic and argument of this world is not going to help. Right? We engage it by connecting it to Krishna, so it'll help purify us. Like that, but it can only be helpful in purifying us from the matter. In the beginning, you will see your own spiritual form. By again and again chanting the spiritual and holy names of Lord Hari, you will come to understand the nature of the soul. By practicing Astanga Yoga or following the path of the impersonalists, you will not be able to see the pure spiritual nature. By directly serving Lord Krishna, you will be able to understand the eternal nature of the soul. Therefore, you should chant the holy names of Lord Hari always and with enthusiasm. Only by chanting the names of Lord Hari will you make advancement in spiritual life. Again and again chanting the holy name for some days, you will eventually attain love for the holy name, a kind of love you have never known before. Accompanying that love will be direct perception of the spiritual world. Of all the different activities of devotional service, chanting the holy names of Lord Hari is the most important and the most quickly effective. In Krishnadas Kaviraj's delightful books, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 4.70.71, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, among the ways of executing devotional service, the 9 prescribed methods are the best, for these processes have great potency to deliver Krishna and ecstatic love for him. Of the 9 processes of devotional service, the most important is to always chant the holy name of the Lord. If one does so, avoiding the 10 kinds of offenses, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead.
Very easily.
Yeah, it says here, one very easily.
But how can one see one's, just like Prabhupada says, if the sunlight is there, then you can also see yourself.
Yeah. So the sunlight is the whole thing. So here he's given the whole, the key to it is then the chanting process. It means all other technical processes, they're not going to get. The Sangha Yoga, the path of the impersonalists, is not going to get, but chanting the holy name will. But we see in here, he says, most important is to always chant the holy name of the Lord. If one does so, avoiding the 10 kinds of offenses, one very easily obtains the most valuable love of Godhead. So, if you can chant without the 10 offenses, very easily one will get love of Godhead. So that means that the 10 offenses, avoiding the 10 offenses, has to be a prominent thing in our consideration. And so then to do that, then we have all the other aspects, all the other angas of devotional service, basically are get us to the point where we give up offenses. Right? Means, basically, you can be humble, tolerant, respect others and not want respect for yourself, then you can chant always, you can chant purely. Right? We see at that point, then everything starts to work. Right? All the desires go. One is able to understand one's spiritual position, one is able to taste that nectar of love for the holy name. And that all comes once that's established. So all rules and regulations basically are to do that. Is simply to get us where we can become humble, tolerant, respectful, and not expect respect for ourselves. Because those have their roots in understanding we are servants of Krishna. As Sanatana Goswami mentioned before, the whole their essence is just we are servants of Krishna. That's amazing. So if we're servant, we're humble. Right? Then whatever situation we're there, we're tolerant, we're respectful to Krishna and everything in connection with Krishna. And we're not expecting anything for ourselves, because we're just a servant. So it works very nicely. So all these other rules and regulations are for establishing that. Right? Right, so it's like, we want respect. Okay, we want respect. How do you want respect? Okay. So we want respect, let's say, in an administrative position. Okay, so you want respect as an administrative position. So then you want to put yourself in an administrative position. But if we're serious about Krishna consciousness, we do it in such a way that it's pleasing to Krishna. So therefore Krishna says an administrator must do all this, 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 this. Right? He must protect his people. He must do so many things. He must have so many good qualities, right? Right, the Kshatriya is mentioned as qualities. It doesn't say what he does. Right? Bhagavad Gita doesn't say Kshatriya is a guy with a big crown on his head, a big sword, and he's really nasty and gets angry very easily and loves to fight. You know, and a Vaishya is one who, you know, at that. It doesn't say that. It says one who is, you know, resourceful and all these different things. Right? So he has qualities. So then, how do we get into that? Oh yes, so then it's administrator, so then you have to do like that. So now what does that mean? Protecting the people means what are you doing? Are you the Lord or are you serving? Right? You're serving. You put yourself in the position of a servant, but in the capacity as an administrator. It may look like you're the head of state, though you're actually a servant of the state. Right? So the Vedic system makes everybody into a servant. Non-Vedic makes everyone into a lord. And that's why the non-Vedic systems never work. And the Vedic system, if it's followed properly, always works. Like that. But if we try to impose the idea that we're going to be the Lord in the Vedic system, it makes trouble. Like Duryodhana thinks he's the Lord, Yudhishthira thinks he's the servant. So we see Yudhishthira is perfect and a perfect example of, you know, proper Vedic administrator. And Duryodhana, we don't think of as a good example. Okay? Vena is not a good example. Like this. Like there's so many bad examples of that, so many good examples of that. So the point is good examples. In the Vedic culture, everyone's a servant. The wife is servant of the husband. Husband is servant of the wife. The parents are servant of the children. The children are servant of the parents. Teacher serves the students. Students serve the teacher. Citizens serve the king. The king serves the citizens. Right? That's what it is. It's trying to do it, but because we're identifying with the body, okay, you want to identify with the body, but still you have to be servant because the nature of the soul is servant. Right? Otherwise, the nature of dead matter is just to be dead. Right? The nature of the body is to smell. Right? So, but we're trying to cultivate the nature of the soul. So therefore, then the soul is pure, therefore in the body we make the body pure. So we serve like that. We even see is that it's called in the traditional language, when you're performing some vratas, like Kartik Vrata or some other vratas, then it's called Niyam Seva. Niyam means the rules and regulations. Service to those rules. You know, we're not following and conquering these rules. No, we're serving these rules. So even that is seen as service. Because the nature of the soul is service. The whole thing is to create the nature of I am servant. Then all so many rules and regulations, then they are useful. It means among all the ways of executing devotional service, 9 are prominent. That means there's so many details and aspects. But all those are simply to help us follow the 9 processes. And the 9, their essence is chanting the holy name. So therefore, one can avoid those 10 offenses, which is based on all those others. So this is showing, this is where Lord Chaitanya is showing, there's so many processes, he's showing where the essence is. So then everything rebalances. Right? If you take Pancharatra as the essence, you know, Arjuna as the essence, then it changes the whole scenario. You understand? If you take Smarana as the essence, then it changes the whole thing. If you take chanting, then it puts it into a different light. Does that make sense?
Even in modern non-Vedic society, although they try to be launched, but the function of servant is insubordinate.
If the material world works, it's only because it's coming closer to the Vedic standard, that's all. Like you see in the West, also they have some that have very nice families. But you'll find, if you study it, how they run their family is closer to the Vedic standard. It's not following a different standard.
My question was, like Prabhupada says, commonly gives example in books, like the king serves or the administrator serves his dependents, whatever. So basically he's referring to this modern context. So what I was trying to ask was...
But Vedic is also... Oh yeah, he's referring to material concept.
Yeah. So what I was trying to say was, even though the mood may not be there that they're servant, but still they have to, they cannot avoid the...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can't avoid it. If you want it to work, it has to be closer to the Vedic. That's all. If it works, it's closer to the Vedic. If it doesn't work, it means going away from the Vedic.
But in any case, the activity of service cannot be avoided, isn't it? Is it what?
No, it can't be avoided. Because that's the nature of the soul. That's why it can't be avoided. But the problem is if that's recognized, then it works. If it's not recognized, it doesn't work. So it works only because of that. That's the thing, is that Vedic is systematically organized. Non-Vedic is not systematically organized, but it's the same thing. It runs the same way. Governments still take tax, businessmen still make money, shudras still serve, teachers and others, they still teach and do those kind of things. In the West, they all do the same, but it's not organized, so they don't get the efficiency that they should.
They may not recognize that they're serving, but they're actually serving.
Yeah, okay. You have to. Because anyone's not serving, it doesn't work. Somebody doesn't serve in a relationship, it doesn't work.
But often, like you're saying, that let's say the rulers are the servants of the people, and the people are the servants of the ruler. But that's an ideal situation.
Yeah.
Often we find that the ruler will take advantage of the people.
Yeah. And then you
rather than people taking advantage of the government.
Then you see it works less.
But what are the supportive remedies for this? Because often the people will end up suffering. So there is a limit. The people automatically will not want to serve the ruler that doesn't give the service back, or the whole system then falls apart.
Yeah, actually, it falls apart. Right. That's what you see. You have a very big country, and then it falls apart and falls into smaller countries, and then those fall apart, and then they fall into smaller, and just become smaller, smaller, until, you know, you have small little tribes, and, you know, like that. And it just comes down to the various families. And, mm-hmm. At the end of Kali Yuga, it just basically gets down to just small little groups. Because unless there's cooperation, you can't have economic development.
And there must be a common understanding.
Must be a common. That's community. When there's community, there's commonality, and then there's prosperity. If there's no commonality, there's no prosperity. You know, so that answers the present need for social economic development. So it has to be something common. That's all. So there's nothing common, then there can't be progress. Can't be progressive as a community. Community means a group of people of the same values. That's the definition. There's not another definition. So if they don't have the same values, then there won't be progress. So there has to be a commonality. So that means you again have to go back down to service. That's one thing. And two, what makes the difference between the Vedic and the non-Vedic is the Vedic accepts the standard is coming from a higher authority. While the modern, the standard is created by the people. That's basically the difference between Vox Populi or Vox Dei. So the modern is the word of the people is the word of God, but ours is the word of God is what the people should be following. Like that. But it's a very old problem, and the West has been fighting with it for thousands of years. You know, he's the first example we have is with Socrates. He was saying there's an absolute standard, we adjust our life to that standard. And the sophists say, no, what the people say is truth, that's truth. So he lost. So therefore we see the Western world is based on what is the popular desire of the people, that's truth. So it can never, and so the more if you get a group of people that have the same idea of truth, it's strong. And if you don't, then it's weak. You know, like that. So it's like you may be able to get a strong situation when you base the whole culture on the lowest principle of sense gratification. So that's the commonality. Then you can have something somewhat powerful. But the problem is everybody has their idea of what sense gratification is. So therefore then there's conflict. But we can see that they can pull themselves together if there's a common enemy to their sense gratification, because they all are based on sense gratification. So if there's someone against sense gratification, they can fight against that, and then there's some commonality. Like that. So there must be some platform of commonality. Then you have community. So service means that's why you see when Prabhupada starts talking about religion and talking about Dharma and talking about nature, immediately the first thing he goes into is the nature of the soul. He doesn't get into the material nature like that, other than to say it's Krishna's inferior energy to be used in his service. It's the principle. So the soul is servant. So as servant, then that which should flavor everything that's done. Then you actually get somewhere. We want to know how to engage the body in Krishna's service. It has to be through understanding your servant and using it. The mind, the intelligence, the sense, they all have to be engaged. Like that. The ego has to be engaged in Krishna's service. Like that. So then it brings us to that point of just we give up the attachment to this material concept and accept the spiritual concept, understanding I am servant of Krishna. Then it works very nicely. So your observation is correct. You can't get away from it. It's just that the Vedic culture recognizes it and the modern doesn't. You can't say it's not a question of if we have a vision, it's a matter of basically what is there in the Shastras. Like let's say you go to a place like New York or any so many major metropolises in the world, and you have a group of people from one part of the world move there, right? And they come and their family members are there, friends, they come there and add to that, we call that community. But what we see is, how do you know that it's the Italian community, or it's the Bangladesh community, or it's this and that? How do you tell? If you go into that area, the restaurants are serving what kind of food? The food of that community. They dress as people of that community. They talk the language of that community. And therefore you call them from that community. Right? Because they like to be with others that have the same values. So therefore then there has to be a common lifestyle. Then you have community. spiritual philosophy, basically it's the same. Therefore, it's together whatever it is. You can feel comfortable basically to go to, you know, any center, any community, ISKCON community in the world, and you feel comfortable philosophically. But you feel socially and economically, devotees may or may not feel comfortable. That's because there's not common values on that platform. So then how do you establish those common values? You take American values, maybe English values, Australian values, you know, French, German, Italian, you know, maybe Romanian, you know, or what about, you know, Azerbaijani or Uzbeki, or, you know, maybe we should, you know, go to Mongolia, or where do we get that? Of course, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that's, you know, there. But how you're going to eat, how sleep, how mate, how defend, that's the difference in community. Is that understood? You know, Americans put salt on their popcorn, the British put sugar. You know, each one thinks the other one's crazy. So you have to have some commonality. So what are the standards? So the easiest is Krishna standards. We dress how Krishna likes us to dress. We eat how Krishna likes us to eat. We interact socially amongst each other, between men and women, and husband and wife, and parents and children, and authorities, and teachers, students, and all this, the way Krishna says we should do. Then there's a common ethic. Therefore, Prabhupada gave us the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. He gave us the Varnashram system. Because that answers all needs of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. All needs of economic, sense gratification, all these things. Dharma, it answers all of that. But not for material purposes. That's then what the Bhagavatam is. Is that then brings it to the same flavor. Right? Like you see in India, all Indians are Indian because they accept the Vedas. But within that, then they have different angles on it. Somebody's a Karmakandi, somebody's a Gyanakandi, this and that. They have different philosophy, one culture. Right? We have one philosophy, different cultures. That's the problem. So Prabhupada said if you have religion but no philosophy, then that's called sentiment. So that's the Hindus. And if one has philosophy but no religion, that's called mental speculation. So mental speculation is not good enough to be create a community. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Like that. So that's the thing. Where does the standards come from? So if they come from Krishna, then it's very easy to establish a commonality. Here again. Computer is wanting attention. Does that make any sense?
So then it seems that it's going to take generations before people realize that they should start having their own ideas and devotees.
Basically. And if you want to be realistic, yes. But the point is you can still go back to Godhead even though one has not perfected, you know, basically a social thing. As long as one becomes humble, tolerant, respectful towards others, and doesn't desire respect for yourself. When it comes to that, one transcends the system. And then with that, that person fits in very nicely. Though, of course, that humility means he's going to deal with others properly. So at least they have to follow the tradition of the, you know, the interactions of the Vaishnava culture in that way, like that. So, you know, they have to work on the Bhagavat platform. But when we talk economic development, that's the Varnashram platform. Bhagavat is not a platform, doesn't have a platform of economic development. Pancharatra doesn't have a platform of economic development. They're both ekayana. They're only for serving the Lord Bhas. One is spontaneous, one is through rules. As soon as there's need of economic development, sense gratification, then you have to use Varnashram. Or you have to drop below Varnashram and, you know, use some speculative method.
Because economic development comes from duties. And then who sets duties? God. Religion comes from God. That's what we were saying before, is that everything that works in the material world because it's coming closer to the religion that God gave. So then it's the thing is the principle is very simple, just like there. All you have to do is chant Hare Krishna, avoid the 10 offenses, and then automatically you develop love for God. So the principle is very simple. Application takes, you know, serious endeavor and, you know, thoughtfulness and all these things. So same way as the principle of the whole social interaction community is very simple. But the difficulty is because of conditioned nature, we're attached to our previous backgrounds and values and ways of life and this and that. You know? So therefore, it's difficult. And they can't see beyond those. Right? Means it doesn't matter that one house cooks, you know, more Vedic or less Vedic, or within Vedic somebody's cooking Bengali or somebody Gujarati or this or that. That's not so important. But what's important is they have the same standard of cooking for Krishna and the cleanliness standards and, you know, these kind of things. But those aren't common. It doesn't matter that someone from Italy cooks Italian and someone else cooks this and that. That's another thing. That's their preferred conditioned tastes. But the standards and how it's prepared and it's offered to Krishna, that makes a difference. That's what makes community or not. You understand that? Behavior. Technically it doesn't really matter whether one wears one's in devotional clothes or one wears, you know, the contemporary clothes. But how they're worn, that makes a difference. You understand? Means the Vaishnava dress is a very respectable, conservative dress. So if you wear Western clothes, then they should be respectable, conservative dress. And you'll find basically the principles are the same. Right? Conservative Western culture, people, you know, they're called the gentlemen, you know, and the women are called gentlewomen. Women don't flaunt themselves, you know, they don't work on the principle, you have it, flaunt it. That's for the street girls, you know, and guys walking around with their t-shirts rolled up to show off their muscles. That's for street boys. Gentlemen don't do that. It's the same in the Vedic culture. So you follow that, it's fine. You know, the dress will change with consciousness. But where you have some people are very conservative and other people are completely wild, and then they claim that wildness is the contemporary norm, which it's not, then that where's going to be the commonality of culture? How you can create a community? You can't. Because the values are different. The detail of the application is not as important. You know, even with the Vedic, there's variety. You know? Means we follow Samaveda in our rituals, someone else follows Rig, someone Yajur, someone Tarva, and they're very different. We go around the fire three times and take seven steps. The Rig Veda goes around the fire seven times and takes seven steps. You know? We have the mother put the foot of the girl on the stone. The others, they don't have to do that. You know, so different things. There's little details. Who cares? Gujarati cooking is different from this. It's all the same stuff. Just the little proportions, this spice, that spice, how they put it, and then it ends up something different. But the principles of cooking in Indian cooking are exactly the same. You know the system in one, you know the system in them all.
Does Krishna appreciate someone?
Well, let's see. Shukta Shak Adibaji Nalita Kushmanda Dalita Oma Dutta Tumi Tavi Mochapanda. It's not on the list, I don't think. Point is whatever is you feel is the best, you offer that according to, you know, the community and the place and all these things. That's also part of the system. Whatever the preparations that community feels is best, those can be offered to Krishna. Yeah, because the idea is the best should be offered to Krishna. So what you value as the best, offered to Krishna, as long as it's within the realm of offerability.
But if it's not in the list, then we should maybe...
That's the next step. Yeah. Means, why do we eat lettuce? Because we think it's very healthy. But if you actually know the health things, then what can you get from the lettuce? Lettuce is meant for the cows. They can take lettuce, digest it, and turn it into milk. They got four stomachs. We have one stomach. So for us, lettuce is bulk. Right? The cultures that eat lettuce, you generally see eat wheat, eat bread. Bread is very constipating. So without the lettuce, nothing moves. So basically, that's what the lettuce does. Right? If in the West you eat normally, it's cold climate, eat a bunch of lettuce, nothing happens. You know, just whatever, stomach stays normal. You come here and you eat a ton of lettuce and all that, and you'll be in the toilet in 15 minutes. Because it doesn't fit the climate here, it's not needed. Indians, if you don't eat raw things, hardly. Fruits they do, this and that, but they don't mix them with cooked things. Because you see, it's not necessary here. Because the diet's different. The diet's based on the Ayurveda, so therefore it's close. You know, of course, there's some variation, there's some compromise for taste. Like that, particular nature of the people, so maybe more, a little more rajasic, a little more, you know, a little more sour, a little more hot, a little more different things that, you know, may or may not be recommended. But you see, even there, in the different seasons, they change. If you really follow the tradition of the cuisine, is that it matches the local place, the climate, and everything like that, and according to the seasons. You know, now it's a bit mixed up. So if you follow tradition. So, therefore, it's conditioning. So when Westerner gets a good salad, they feel good, feel refreshed, feel light, and they feel this is very healthy. So part of eating is that the mind should be satisfied. So at least that way, then the mind's satisfied, and then in that way, it's conducive to health. Like that. But at the same time, it's not necessarily that it's the most wonderful. Like that. So, therefore, because we have that taste, we have that conditioning, our body's used to that. You know, it's what our mother would eat when, you know, when we were in the womb, so we're made out of that. So then if we eat it, no problem. But then we get to a point of, well, what does Krishna like? That's another then step. Like that. Then that's nice. Yeah. But that's a detail. The main thing is that we're cooking to please Krishna. So that can take the form of what I think is best, I cook for Krishna. Or what Krishna wants, I cook for him. That's just different stages of the same thing. Like that. But the main thing is that it's being done for Krishna. That's the thing. So that's where we see the difference. Are we eating, offering to please Krishna, eating to please, are we dressing to please Krishna? Right? You know, is that how Krishna wants us to dress? You know, is this how us as a man in the community should dress, or as a woman in the community should dress, or whatever it is this how Krishna would like it? So the principle is the most important, the fundamental is the most important. Then from there, then you can refine the detail, take the detail to higher and higher levels.
So in the instruction, there would be seniors of the family, they would
Here you need another, maybe 10 years. It's when you get who's now basically in the seat of influence, but they're doing it from the grihastha level and from their own personal needs to the point where they get beyond that. You know, when death's staring them in the face and they're too old to get involved in all that, then it'll turn, and then they'll just give advice what's really important, what may actually made the marriages work, what actually worked in the marriage, or what actually worked in the dealings amongst devotees.
you know, kind of step back from their own personal motives, you know, own personal conditioning, then it'll be there. But it takes time, you know, to establish, you know, a whole social system takes time. But if it's not based on the essence which Prabhupada gave, then it won't work, you know. Won't work. So that's the most essential thing. Is that okay? Okay, so we should end here. Om Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jai.